Hi everyone, Drew Prode here. Today is Big Idea Tuesday, where I come to you with a thought, a distinction, an idea that's radically transformed my life for the better. I love these episodes because they're an opportunity for me to come to you with something that's genuinely made a difference in my life, some way that I think about things. So every Tuesday we do these Big Idea episodes, and every Thursday is when I put out my regular podcast. Now, the Thursday episodes, I interview experts in the field of neuroplasticity, biohacking, functional medicine. And those episodes are great because I get to hear their thoughts, recommendations, and ideas that they have for you. And I love hearing about diet, and I love hearing about mindset, and I love hearing about so many different topics. But these Tuesday episodes are near and dear to my heart because they're really about how to think differently and how to become more aware. And I've honestly found in my own life, if I could graph and measure my average daily level of happiness, my happiest that I've become is not when I finally figure out the perfect diet or way to eat. It's not when I get that one tip of which supplement to take. The happiness and the joy that I've created in my life when I see the biggest peaks, it's when I've learned to let something go. It's when I've learned to look at life differently. It's when I've learned to step into gratitude. It's when I've learned to shift how my brain thinks about things. And maybe my external world didn't even really change that much, but my internal world changed, and that's what these episodes are. So let's jump into it. Today, we're talking about three ways to catch and turn around our brain's negativity bias. How to catch it, and how to turn it around, the brain's negativity bias. Let's start off with the basics. What is our brain's negativity bias, and why does it matter? Well, I'm going to read you a quote that's a great summary of what the negativity bias is from an article called What is the Negativity Bias? By Very Well Mind. You can find it in the show notes. So quick little paragraph. The negativity bias is our tendency to not only register negative stimuli more readily, but also dwell on these events. Also known as positive-negative asymmetry, this negativity bias means that we feel the sting. We feel the sting of rebuke more powerfully than we feel the joy of praise. You see, when we have, and all of us have it, when we have or are stuck in negativity bias, we're much more likely to remember negative events rather than positive ones. You know, there's that classic story that a lot of people that are in this field of psychology and study negativity bias talk about, which is think back to where you were on September 11th. When September 11th happened, 9/11, where were you? What were you doing? And often for people who are even from a generation prior, you'll often hear the phrase of, where were you when Kennedy got shot? We know exactly, most people can tell you exactly if they were alive during that time. They can tell you exactly where they were, what they were doing, maybe the smell in the air, what they were paying attention to, because when we experience negative things, when we experience some version of emotional trauma, our brain hardwires that into our system. A more simple version could be, let's say you come out with a new idea, or you write something, or you put out a piece of content on social media, or you share something exciting with the world. You can tell 10 friends and 9 of them say, wow, that's a great idea, or that's cool, or you're up to something amazing. But then one friend or one commenter, whether you know them or don't, one friend, one commenter could say something negative or what's perceived as negative, and that will be the comment that sticks with you. Somebody could tell you, that's a stupid idea, or why would you waste your time doing that? And that sting sits with us. Now, before we get into how to turn it around, we first have to understand, why do we have a negativity bias, and how is it that it's gotten out of control with the modern society that we live in? Well, there's a really great paper that I'm linking to here in the show notes that's found on PubMed that was originally published through the NIH, a group of researchers that were writing a summary paper about, the title specifically is, Not All Emotions Are Created Equal: The Negativity Bias in Social Emotional Development. So this paper really helps us understand, why is it and how early do we see a negativity bias? Why is it that we have one, and how early do we see it in human evolution and with kids and infants? So I'm going to pull a little quote from this paper that's contextual and important for this conversation. And the quote says, infants attend to, are more influenced by, and use a greater degree of negativity rather than positive facets of their environment. We propose, this is the authors of the paper, we propose possible ontogenic, which is just means related to the evolution and the maturation of an animal. We propose possible ontogenic pathway for emergence of negativity bias, and we argue that this bias serves an important evolutionary and developmental functions. So why would our brain be more programmed to be negative and look for negative things rather than positive? Well, the researchers in this paper, and you can read it for yourself, it's a PDF linked in the show notes, propose a whole host of things that are out there, but that it's very important for an infant or toddler's development for them to pay attention to, for their own safety, things that are negative experiences. Because at the end of the day, our genes, if you've ever read the book, The Selfish Gene, you know that inside of there, our genes' goals is to preserve, duplicate, preserve, and carry on the legacy of the genetic information that's inside there, our DNA. And negative situations are more likely to be a threat, to get in the way of it. Now, growing up on the plains of Africa or in these villages that we all came from, negative experiences were not as frequent as we experience them today. But when we did, when we would experience negative experiences, they would be much bigger and much more traumatic. Whether the classic sort of a lion chasing you or a cheetah or whatever it might be. Negative situations were less frequent, so when they happened, we really needed to pay attention. And they were often direct threats that we would experience, something that was related to our survival. Today, you've heard many experts on the podcast talk about how the fear that most of us deal with today is perceived threats rather than real threats. So a perceived threat is I have to go in and have a conversation with my boss about something. I have to go have a difficult conversation with my partner. I have to tell somebody that I no longer want to work on this thing that I promised to work on them for. I have an interesting idea or a video that I want to make and I want to post online, but I'm worried about what backlash I would get if people don't think I'm good enough. So those are all perceived threats. They're not actually related to our survival, and they're not actually related to our physical well-being, but it feels that way. We feel it fully in our body that these perceived threats are related to our survival. So we are now living in a day and age that is completely different than where we came from. So it requires us to step into this whole period of how to retrain our brains. Our lives have evolved more externally than our brains have evolved internally. Our brains are still designed, and it takes thousands of and hundreds of thousands of our years for our brain to evolve, but our brain is still really designed to be the protector, which is why we lean into negativity. You know, the classic phrase when it comes to the media is if it bleeds, it leads. If there's some negative news, if there's some negative information, who got shot, something bad that happens, then people are more likely to pay attention, which is why if you turn on the news anywhere in the world, anything probably besides public TV and public radio, if you turn it on, the immediate focuses on what's wrong. What's wrong? What's wrong in the world? What's a problem? What's not going well? What's a terrible situation? You know, Reverend Michael Beckwith, who I've talked about on the podcast before, I'm excited to have him on one day. I got to reach back out to him. He says that the news is the lowest common denominator of the human experience. Let's find everything wrong that is the most basic aspect of humanity that we can all relate to, and let's put it on blast 24/7, which is why it's so important to have boundaries with the news. Listen to slow news and don't have the TV on a regular basis, because that feeds into the negativity bias that our brain already has. So jumping out big picture, What's the problem with the negativity bias? It's crazy to even ask, but sometimes we don't even know. Like, okay, so what's the big deal? Our brain is more likely to remember negative things and positive things. What's the problem with that? Well, the problem is, and we've all felt it and experienced it, the problem is when we get stuck and we keep on feeding the negativity bias, there's a whole host of consequences that end up happening. One of the first consequences is that we feel down. We feel less excited about life. Why would you feel excited to work on something new? Why would you feel excited to put something out? Why would you feel excited and hopeful for the future when you can only see signs of negativity around you, or what seems to be that you can only see signs of negativity around you? The second thing is we feel stuck. Let's say we do want to do something. And if our negativity bias is focused on all the things that are wrong, we'll feel stuck because we're like, it's not worth it. Or more people are just going to hate on me and say that what I have to offer isn't good. So we feel down, we feel stuck, we lose hope. That's the challenge when we get stuck in negativity bias. And it's important to remember, because then when we understand what we're losing, when we understand what we are giving up because we're stuck in negativity bias, we can actually say that we want to put attention on turning it around. All right, so you with me so far? Now, let's jump into the turnaround. Now, the thing about negativity bias is that it's kind of like this quote about fear that I shared on my Instagram today. By the way, if you're not following me on Instagram, would love us to connect on there. There's a great quote by Stephen Pressfield. I'll link to it in the show notes, but I'm going to read it out to you. Stephen Pressfield, he's the author of The War of Art, one of my all-time favorite books about the resistance, the fear that's inside of all of us and how we can overcome it by understanding what it really is. And that's exactly what this quote is about. The amateur believes he must first overcome his fear, then he can do his work. The professional knows that fear can never be overcome. He knows there is no such thing as a fearless warrior or a dread-free artist. I'm going to read that one more time. The amateur believes he must first overcome his fear, then he can do his work. The professional knows that fear can never be overcome. Fear can never be overcome. He knows there's no such thing as a fearless warrior or a dread-free artist. I love that quote because, first of all, it is so true to so many things. Well, let me actually just backtrack for a second. So the term amateur is a term that Stephen Pressfield uses to explain somebody who's not serious about anything in their life, a goal, anything that they want to do. Take an NBA player, that's a professional. Take somebody who kind of wants to work out and improve their body but isn't serious about it, that's an amateur. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be an NBA player to be a professional. It just means that you have to have the mindset of a professional in any aspect that you want to, not just with sports, but in anything. Say you want to start a new business, okay? Here's how the amateur thinks. Here's how the professional thinks. So that's the context for that. Why I love this quote is that sometimes we hear this phrase, we have to become fearless or get over our fear or overcome our fear. And what Stephen Pressfield here is saying is that you can't. There's no such person out there. Maybe they don't have the same fears they used to have years ago. Let's say you had a fear of public speaking and then you just are like, okay, I'm going to start public speaking. You do it. You keep on doing it. You do it and you get better. And then one day you don't have that fear in the same way, right? That's possible. But what Stephen Pressfield here is saying is that every single person that's out there, no matter how talented they are, still deals with some version of fear. Just the difference is the professional knows that they can never get completely rid of the fear. They can never get completely rid of it. And that's why they have to take it along with them. It's like when we don't expect fear to not be there, then we plan our life accordingly. We still work on stuff even though we're afraid because we find the reason that we want to do it. We find out why it's so important to us and we reflect on the regret we'd have if we didn't actually make progress on something. So how does that relate to the negativity bias? The reason it relates to the negativity bias is that we can't assume there will be no negativity bias. Sometimes we look at the lives of other people or we read quotes online or we listen to podcasts and we think, man, that person never has a negative thought or that person never beats themselves up. Everybody beats themselves up. Everybody get stuck in their own version of negativity bias. That's why the first thing to understand in my first big idea on this podcast is that what we can hope for at the most, and the best hope that we can have when it comes to the negativity bias, is catching it early. The faster we catch ourselves stuck in the negativity bias, the happier we'll become long term. Think of the phrase spiraling downwards. Spiraling downwards means that you get caught up in a loop. Your negativity bias becomes like a domino, and the longer you get stuck in it, the more dominoes that it continues to knock over. And it's almost like you spiral downwards because you get stuck in that. What helps us step out of that spiraling downwards and transform it into spiraling upwards, breaking out of the negativity bias, is when we catch ourselves early. When we catch ourselves and say, oh, shoot, that's crazy that I was beating myself up. That's crazy that I was looking for all negative stuff. That's crazy that I was snapping at my spouse or partner or significant other or kids. I just got temporarily stuck in the negativity bias. So the question becomes, how do we catch it early? The first thing is that, and actually let me backtrack for a second. The reason that I say catch it early is that it's very hard to notice when we're in a negativity bias ourselves. It's very hard to completely prevent. So when we focus on catching it early, we're looking for signs that we're in it. Just like it's hard to prevent, it's hard to actually know that you're in a negativity bias, which means that we have to look for signs. So here are the two common signs that I see for myself, and you have to figure out if these work for you, that I'm stuck in a negativity bias. The first one is tightness. I notice a contraction first in my body. It's said that our body actually knows how we feel a few milliseconds before our brain realizes it. So first our body knows how we feel, and then our brain turns that into a thought and says, I feel this, I feel, you know, that, whatever it might be. So for me, I notice that there's a tightness often in my stomach. That's where I can keep a lot of tension. For other people, they notice that there's a tightness in their shoulders, in their neck. There's a tightness that's there in their jaw. Now, sometimes we don't know what that tightness is related to. It could just be a general sign of stress or fatigue, but I often found that when I check in myself, then I can begin to actually explore it. I may not know what it means, but at least I know that there's something that's going on for me to pay attention to. So tightness somewhere in my body. So the question for you first is, where do you notice tightness in your body and tension or a general feeling of unpleasantness that's not a physical pain that is related to an injury? Where do you notice that tightness for you? The second thing that I notice that I use as a sign, as a signpost that I am stuck in some sort of negativity bias, is when I begin to overconsume. When I focus on overconsumption in my own life, when I'm overeating, when I'm overwatching on, you know, Netflix, or I've overconsumption on social media, anytime that I'm over anything on consumption, whatever that consumption is, information or actual food, that's an indication that I know that something is going on, that I don't feel good, that I'm stuck in some form of negativity bias, that my brain is looking for what's wrong rather than noticing what's good, right? So again, we're looking for signs to help us understand that we're stuck in negativity bias, because it's hard to actually know when we're in it, that we're actually in it. So we need signs, we need examples, we need markers that are out there. So once we know how to catch it early, and we become better at that, what that allows us to do, it allows us to shorten the gap between being in a funk. Sometimes people are in a funk. I think I talked about this last time. Sometimes you can be so hard on yourself that it's hard to pull yourself out of it. And it could be an entire year that you've been hard on yourself. Sometimes it's an entire lifetime for people. Sometimes it's months. Sometimes it's weeks. Sometimes it's days. I know that I'm making progress because when I get better at catching myself in any pattern that's destructive that's out there, whether it's negativity bias or anything else, I know that I'm making progress when I can get better at catching myself earlier, because I shorten the time that I stay in the actual funk. The funk is going to happen, right? That's what Steven Pressfield was saying with this quote about fear. It's going to happen. It's going to happen to all of us. But if we get better and better at catching it earlier, the only question is not if it's going to happen, but how long it's going to happen. So then it's not about being worried about getting caught up in negativity and it happening to us. It's about the only real concern is how long are we going to stay there? And when we catch it early, we can stay there less longer, if that makes any sense. So once we learn how to catch it early and we understand why, and we have a couple signposts to support us in that process, the next question becomes, what do we do from there? Well, I want to read a quote that I had shared with you before that was related to some writing that I was doing early in the year. And the quote says this: your brain is like a detective. It's always looking for the evidence it needs to confirm its perspective. If you feel like you lack something or are not enough, it will go on the hunt to prove you right. But awareness stops the cycle. That's why the most powerful question you can ask yourself is, what evidence is my brain currently looking for, and why is it looking for that evidence? So that brings us into big idea number two on today's podcast, which is three ways to catch and turn around our brain's negativity bias. And number two is question, name, and tame. So in my last post that I was reading to you, I said, that's why the most powerful question you can ask yourself is, what evidence is my brain currently looking for? So big idea number two is question, name, and tame. Number one, question. What evidence is my brain? If you catch it early, if you notice tightness in your body, if you notice overconsumption of media or food or anything else, first you're just trying to catch yourself in some sort of pattern. The next thing is we're trying to question it. What evidence is my brain looking for right now? I often tell people that if you're scrolling on social media or you're watching TV and you start to feel tightness in your body or you feel behind or you feel not enough, whatever it might be, first you notice it. And then the next question you ask yourself is why. You ask yourself is what? What evidence is my brain looking for? So sometimes people are on social media and they feel behind or they're not doing enough or they feel like their life is not as interesting or they feel like they don't feel good because everybody else has it figured out and they don't. So now we ask, what evidence is my brain currently looking for? Okay, so I'm starting to notice I feel tight in my chest or I feel tight in my gut. And what's going on right now? Well, I'm noticing that my brain is looking for, is seeing examples of everybody who has it figured out. And I feel like I don't. Okay, so now we have the what. What evidence is my brain currently looking for? It's looking for evidence that everybody has it figured it out. Then we want to question it. Then the next thing is we want to name it. We want to name that fear. So why is my brain looking for that evidence? Okay, it's looking for that evidence because I don't feel like I'm doing enough. I don't feel like I'm making the most of this quarantine. Everybody's super productive and I'm not as productive. So that's why I feel this way. So we question it, we name it, and then we can begin to tame it. Because if our brain is like a detective, it's always looking for evidence that it needs to confirm its perspective, we can only understand how to turn it around when we understand what evidence it's trying to look for and why. That's the questioning and the naming component. We question what is our brain looking for, and then we name why it's looking for that evidence. The more you practice this, the better you'll get. Sometimes people watch the news all day and they feel really anxious and they feel tight in their shoulders and they feel stressed. I don't know, I just feel stressed. I feel stressed. And they tell everybody they feel stressed. And if they would pause for a second and say, okay, first question. What evidence is your brain currently looking for right now? Okay, my brain has been trained because I was watching the news all day to look for examples of how the future is not hopeful and how the economy is going to go to shit and how it's, you know, a really shitty situation for everybody right now. Okay, that, which by the way, that partially might be true, but let's say your brain is trained to look for things like that. Then the next question becomes, now why? Name it. Why is my brain looking for this evidence? Well, partially it's because the media is training you to look that way. But another reason is that it's because I feel worried or I feel like I'm not sure what to do in my business next, or I feel like I'm not sure what's going to happen with my job, or I feel insecure about some aspect of my life. So if we understand what our brain is looking for and why, that's the first part of the process where then we can actually see that the negativity bias that we've stepped into is just like a temporary pair of glasses. They're glasses that are red colored that forces us to look at everything in the world as red. And when we realize that we've trained our brain to put on those glasses, then we can take those glasses off and start to look for something different. It's the hardest thing in the world to ask ourselves to become more aware, because it really just takes us sitting down and asking ourselves powerful questions. What evidence is my brain currently looking for? And why is it looking for that evidence? Do I feel afraid? Do I feel insecure? Do I feel unhappy? Do I feel unsupported? Do I feel stuck? Why is my brain looking for that evidence? And what evidence is my brain looking for? That's big idea number two. So once we catch it early, which was big idea number one, we can step into question, name, and tame, which was big idea number two. I didn't get to the tame part. That comes kind of next with big idea number three, which is creating some version of our own bubble. You know, you hear this phrase, which is that you live in a bubble, and it's often used as a negative phrase. It's something that we tell people when they're acting delusional or aren't seeing the truth in a situation. But I actually am going to argue that living in some version of your own bubble can actually be a good thing, because it's all true. The negative is true. The positive is true. The in-between is true. So if we want to train our brain back into positivity and looking for what's a potential, not so we can be delusional, but so that we can use it as an advantage to get whatever done that we need to get done. If we want to begin to train our brain into that, what we have to do is we have to step back into another version of a bubble. Our brain already has one bubble. It has its negativity bias bubble. Another version is a positivity bias bubble. How do we step into that? Well, the first step is we have to go back and turn to the things that make us feel good. Human beings are very bad at remembering what makes them feel good and doing the things that make them feel good. So if I would ask you right now, what makes you feel good? What are the simplest, most basic things that bring you joy, that make you feel good, that you have control over, right? I'll answer for myself. The first one is going for a walk and being in nature. Doesn't cost anything at all. Okay, maybe I can't go to the parks right now because they're all closed, but I can walk around my neighborhood. I can walk down a pathway or a street that has more trees on it, and I start to feel like I'm in more nature than I currently am in when I'm just sitting at my house. So that's one thing. Another thing that makes me feel good, calling my friends and talking to them about what their goals and dreams are, what they're working on, what they're reading, and having positive conversations, right? What's another thing that makes me feel good? Working out. Just even doing a 7-minute workout, 7-minute New York Times workout, doing that, or going on a little run, as I did the other day with my girlfriend, all very simple things. So when we are in negativity bias, the first thing that we want to look at is what are the simple things that we can do that immediately make us feel good? And first, starting with our body, because negativity isn't just in the brain. Negativity, when we step into negativity bias, it becomes almost like a costume. And it's not just a hat for our head and our brain. It becomes a full body costume. So that means all the cells in our body, which are listening to our thoughts, are programmed for negativity. So one way to get rid of it is to shake it off. Just like a dog shakes after a stressful experience, we as human beings have to shake. So what is that for you? Is that dancing? Is that Zumba class? Is that a workout? Is that calling a friend? Is that just walking around the block? Is that going and having coffee by yourself, even if it's a 5 or 10 minute break? If you have kids and that's all you can muster, getting somebody to cover for you? What is that? Is that reading a book? Whatever we can do to step back in the body is the first way to begin to tame and create our own bubble that we can step back into and step out of that negativity bias. It's the simplest thing, but it's the most effective thing. Once we step back into that and we shake off the negativity that we were in, Our brain now is more open and receptive for positive experiences, which is why it's so important to create our own version of a bubble. I create my own version of a bubble just because I don't watch, you know, CNN or Fox News all day for the to hear the latest updates on the coronavirus. Doesn't mean that I'm not informed on everything that's happening. I listen to slow news. I listen to or read things from NPR or other places where I can digest what's actually happening on my own terms and not get worked up into anxiety. So just simply by not watching the news, that's a version of me creating my own bubble to be more protective so that my brain doesn't fall victim to negativity bias. What's another version of that? Another version of that is that I limit my time on social media. I limit my time on social media and I catch myself when I'm aimlessly scrolling and I say, this isn't really going to serve anything. And I say, if you want to stay on social media, do it because you're going to post something interesting. You're going to post something that provides you value. And sometimes when I really notice that I'm overusing social media, like when quarantine first happened, I said, okay, I'm going to set some boundaries. The boundary is I can only go on to post something interesting. I can't go on to consume. And I do that for a period of time until I notice that I'm not in that place where I'm using social media as a mechanism to confirm whatever negativity bias that I've stepped into. So boundaries, not watching things, being aware of the consumption that we have, being aware of the information that we're taking in. These are all versions of us creating our own bubble. What's another version of that? Well, setting an intention in the morning. Waking up first thing in the morning and setting an intention for the day and saying that this is what I'm saying my day is going to be dedicated towards. My intention today was to put out valuable content and to make sure that no matter how busy the day got, because I have a bunch of different meetings and projects that are going on, that I didn't skip Big Idea Tuesday. That was my intention for the day, is to provide value from the experiences and the knowledge that I've come across in my own life. So I set that intention first thing in the morning. And now my brain starts looking for evidence that that's true. So even though I ran late because I was working on my next documentary project with my business partner, Dr. Hyman, and I was writing some content this morning for another thing that we were doing, and I got caught up in a couple meetings, even though I was running late, I still saw that I had a 30-minute gap to be able to squeeze in an episode. And I thought, wow, I'm so thankful that I at least have that time period. So setting an intention is one way to do that. This doesn't work for me, but journaling. Journaling and reflecting is a great opportunity for a lot of people that helps them step into the bubble, create their own bubble. One of the best journals that I've seen out there is by two of my friends, the Icons, and it's called the 5-Minute Journal. You can look it up online and I'll include it in the show notes below. It's a journal that you can fill out in 5 minutes. I'm bringing it up here right now. 5-Minute Journal. You can do it in 5 minutes and it's a simple way. It's created by a company called Intelligent Change. It's a simple way to ask a few basic questions that lead you into a prompt. And the prompt could be, what are you grateful for? What do you want to, what would you like to make today? What's a daily affirmation for you? What's something amazing that happened today? So there's a morning piece and I think there's an evening piece. Actually, I've never done it before, so I'm just guessing on that. That's another way to step into a bubble. When you create a bubble, which again, we always use it as a negative thing. Oh, they're living in a bubble. Stop living in a bubble. It's actually the most beautiful thing that you can do for yourself is to create a bubble that makes sense for you, that protects your brain and keeps it in the positive upward spiral rather than the negative. Because again, at the end of the day, it's all true. The negativity is true. The positivity is true. Everything is true. The only challenge with the negativity bias is when you only, because your brain is wired this way, you only give priority to the negative experiences or circumstances that are in our lives. If that's you, I hope that this podcast has given you some perspective on stepping out of it by understanding why it happens, how it happens to everybody, why it's programmed into our brain's evolution, because it's important, especially for infants and babies, to step into negativity bias to protect themselves, how it's not needed because of the current state of the world that we live in. There's more chances for negative like experiences, perceived threats to happen, which we internalize as actual threats, which is not true. How we can catch it early, which is simply awareness, how we can look for tightness in our body, how we can look at things that we do like overconsumption, overeating, too much Netflix, too much social media, as an example that we're stuck in some version of negativity bias, which is all part of the process of catching it early. How we can use the question and name technique. What evidence is our brain looking for and why is it looking for that evidence? And lastly, the tame version of that, which is how can we step into a bubble of positivity? How can we go and do the things that we know that will make us feel good, but that we tend to overlook and forget about? Walking in nature, calling your friends, having an accountability partner, journaling, doing some version of some break spiritual reading that makes you feel good. All right, everyone, this has been Big Idea Tuesday, 3 ways to catch and turn around your brain's negativity bias. Hope you found value. If you did, you can shoot me a text 302-335-6565. And as always, if you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. I'll see you next week.